We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection. And the majority of the time, she will choose life. But they can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside them. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby or visit preborn.com.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
And welcome to Today's Issues. No, I'm not Tim Wildman. I'm Ed Vitagliano, sitting in for Tim Wildman. He'll be back in the captain's chair tomorrow, flying the USS Enterprise on a five-year mission, boldly going where no man has gone before. How about that? Wesley Wildman, good morning.
Good morning. I'm just glad to be on your right hand today. I'm your right hand man.
You're my right hand man today.
I got you today, Ed.
And Fred Jackson.
Well, would I save you?
Yes, listen, I need saving.
Fred? Yeah, far to the left.
far to the left. And Alex McFarland also joins us today. Good morning to you, Alex. Where are you phoning in from or comrexing in from?
I am in North Carolina at my office at Southside Baptist Church. I'm not on staff here, but they graciously give me office space and a studio that we've built where we do Exploring the Word live 5 days a week. But I love what you said, you know, riffing on the Star Trek intro, boldly going, today's issues, boldly going where mainstream media really doesn't always go.
Hey, I like that.
We could
probably spoof that, get some kind of music that's similar but not exact to the old Star Trek shows so we don't get sued.
Yeah, that's
and,
right.
And we could
surprise Dad with it.
Truth, the final frontier.
Man. As an intro.
Listen, I'm loving it. Truth, the final frontier. And then we could, you know, every once in a while, you know, Fred can say, you know, Ed, I'm a doctor, not a plumber.
You know. She's breaking up, sir.
Yes, Wesley could say, I'm not sure how much she can take.
I'm not good with accents or impersonation.
Well,
I would have to use AI.
It's all inside baseball when it comes to the old Star Trek show.
I think we're showing our age, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I show it more and more. And you know what? I've reached the age, Alex, where I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care
exactly.
If I'm showing my age. There was a time there in the 40s and 50s when I was in my 40s and 50s where I didn't want anyone to think that I was old. Now, listen, when I check out at a restaurant, my wife and I, and the young lady behind the counter says, I've already given you your senior discount, sir, without me asking, I'm good with that.
It's demoralizing, isn't it?
Well, it was for a while. Now it's not.
But take advantage of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Alex, anyway, thank you for joining us. And the church, I'm sure, is blessed to have you there. I'm sure you do a little bit of preaching every once in a while to kind of pay for your lodgings.
Rent.
Yeah, pay
yeah.
rent.
Yeah, they are so gracious, Pastor Howard McNeil. I'm in what was at one time the choir room, and they've allowed me to set up all this gear, and we do lots and lots of AFR radio from the studio that they give us.
You kick the choir out?
Wow. Yeah, we're like, folks, we're taking over. But
move the robes.
There's a lot in the news, and I know you're flying the plane today, Ed, so I don't want to take over here, but I feel privileged. Whenever I get to be on Today's Issues, it's a great honor.
Well, listen, we're just glad that you were able to join with us. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to be here, but I felt better, so decided to come on in. But I always love having Alex on because you bring so much to the program. But you're right, there is a lot going on. It is Monday, December 9th. Fred, little bit of news overseas.
Yeah, as if the Middle East did not have enough in the way of a crisis right now going on the weekend. And it's actually started to brew last week in Syria. As we heard of rebels coming in on the eastern border of Syria over the weekend, the Syrian leader, Bashar Assad, fled to Moscow as those rebels headed toward the Syrian capital of Damascus. And basically these rebels, and we'll talk about what constitutes the rebels in Syria a little bit, these rebels have taken over. We saw demonstrations in the streets of Damascus and other cities in Syria celebrating the fact that the Assad regime was coming to an end. They've been in power for, what, 40, 50 years there? And brutal dictatorship.
Since the 70s.
So the rebels have been welcomed. Question is now, is it going to be any better? Because Syria has served as a pipeline for the Iranians to ship weapons into Syria and then on to the Hezbollah terrorists in Lebanon. Is that going to change? Big question this morning. So what is going to change? What's going to become of Assad in Moscow? One of those questioned about all of this was Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican of Arkansas, on the fall of Assad. And according to Senator Cotton, this could be good news because he believes it weakens Iran and Russia, but he says the future is cloudy. Cut number two.
First off, it's very welcome news to the Syrian people. As you said, they've suffered under the Assad dictatorship for more than 50 years. It's also humiliating news for our adversaries, Russia and Iran, which have been propping up Assad for over a decade. Russia has two major bases there in Syria that they've used to help support the Houthi rebels in Yemen that have been attacking our sailors in the Red Sea. But we also have to be guarded about the future as well. I don't think we should expect democracy is naturally going to flower in Syria. We have to protect our interests, as Israel does as well. That's why the United States and Israel carried out those airstrikes over the weekend to make sure, for instance, that ISIS remnants in eastern Syria weren't taking the advantage of this period to gain more land, or that those chemical weapons or other weapons depots you mentioned weren't falling into the wrong hands.
Now, as it, Senator Cotton mentioned, over the weekend, in the wake of the rebels taking over, both the United States Air Force and Israeli forces went in, and they did bombing runs on weapons caches there because they're not clear as to who's going to control those because they represent a danger. Remember, Israel has a border with Syria. It has been a problem through the years. One of those commenting on that this morning was incoming hostage affairs envoy for the new Trump administration, Adam Bowler. Cut number three.
Well, I think interesting developments here is you see Israel pushing further into Syria. They're really trying to establish two things, a real zone so that they can make sure that there are not more weapons and more fighters in a zone that's close to Israel. The second thing they're looking for is they're finding and destroying chemical weapons, which is interesting because everybody thought there were chemical weapons in Syria, and it turns out there are chemical weapons in Syria. The most important thing we should be thinking about right now is whether we can get Americans home. There is an American that's there. In fact, there are four or five more. I think that information is somewhat classified, but the American Austin Tice has been in Syria for 9+ years. And it would be great to get him because what's happening is that regime is collapsing. You see that Bashar went to Russia, and now you have rebels that may or may not be friends to the United States.
So there you have it. A big question mark as to whether the rebel takeover will be a positive, but both the United States and Israel taking precautions that those caches, those weapon caches, that this speaker was talking about, Adam Bowler, could still pose a threat to Israel.
Now, that Austin Tice that he just mentioned, I only read here recently, he was presumed dead for a long time, wasn't he? Family still held out hope, and now the discussion is that he may very well still be alive, but he's been there for 9 years.
Yes, according to Mr. Bowler.
All right, Alex, we'll pitch it to you first, then Wesley. This is a complicated situation because some of these rebels are Al-Qaeda and ISIS, who have been enemies of the United States. Al-Qaeda was behind 9/11. And so this does get complicated because on the other hand, I can see where the U.S., in terms of its foreign policy, would want the Assad regime to go away because they were the ones allowing Russia and Iran to funnel into the Middle East and to stir up trouble through Hezbollah and the Houthis in Yemen.
Yeah, it really is complicated. Okay, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but the Assad regime there at the Syrian border, that was a threatening presence to Israel. And I've actually been to this border. This is really surreal. But 10 years ago when I was in Israel, we got taken within a few hundred yards of the Syrian border. So I'm watching news footage of a place that I walked. And in fact, there's still, they think, you know, bombs buried in the ground from 1973, so we were very judicious, but I've been to this border. But the Assad regime, weren't they really propped up by Russian armaments that they had in possession, and further armaments were promised if needed? I mean, this is really a blow to Russia's muscle, allegedly, in the Middle East, isn't it, Ed?
Yeah, it is, and I think that's what Tom Cotton was saying, is that this is a humiliation. Now, Iran is increasingly being isolated, I think. I think that's because of President Trump, President-elect Trump.
Exactly.
I think countries know, I'm not trying to over-dramatize this, but the new sheriff in town, and that Iran is likely to be isolated like it was under President Trump during his administration. But this is embarrassing for Russia, because for the last decade, maybe a little bit more, they've wanted a presence in the Middle East. This goes back to the Cold War with the U.S. and NATO against the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, that they had proxy regimes in the Middle East. The Soviets helped support Egypt. We helped support Israel. And when they went to war, Israel would win. That was always embarrassing for the Soviets. And now the Russians are being embarrassed, too, under Putin, for what has happened, because they were promising to provide more munitions if they needed. Wesley, and then I want to toss another question out to you guys regarding what's been going on in Syria.
Well, I'll give you my geopolitical expertise.
Man, bring it.
Are you ready for
this?
Yeah,
well, I'm ready.
I agree with Tom Cotton.
Yeah.
I don't think he could have said it any better. He gave a well-balanced conservative position on it. Now, I will add to what he said, and that's that as it relates to America being involved in this, I could kind of understand why they did their airstrikes, and that's fine. But beyond that, beyond the going in and doing that and coming out, that's fine. But I don't think that we need to get involved in anything beyond that as far as a more permanent position. Just because unless it has to do with affecting American a threat to America,
yeah.
I would.
What about Israel?
That's right, or Israel, or a threat to America, because we've already tried going over there for a decade and trying to help them build a
20
democracy.
20 years,
that's right, 20 years already tried that. So I would not do that. But my position is I couldn't have stated it any better.
Well, then let me just toss out to you three guys. I know none of us are geopolitical experts here. I certainly don't claim to be. But we do run the country. I mean, we do have an opinion that matters when we contact, you know, our senators or our representative and let them know what we expect. So here's the headline out of the Los Angeles Times. Now, I've not had a chance to read this, but this is interesting. And the headline is this: in Syria, militias armed by the Pentagon fight those armed by the CIA. Okay, and it says the CIA, through Operation Timber Sycamore, funds ISIS in Syria. The Pentagon funds and arms Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. It deployed F-35 fighters, jets, and Reaper drones to give them air superiority against Assad-backing forces. Now, so I'll come back to you, Fred. You just tell me, and then we'll go Alex and Wesley. Admittedly, the Middle East is a mess, okay? And it is always going to be a mess, I guess.
Sharia laws, though, is what governs
yes.
them. So, I mean, that tells you, I mean.
When America considers what role it plays, if this is true, this Los Angeles Times article, and I'm going to delve deeper into it when I get a chance, but if that's true, that's bizarre. When there are people in North Carolina still sleeping in tents, the Biden administration is funneling billions into Ukraine and billions into Syria while the United States needs help. And it appears, if this is true, that those funds were going to sides, opposite sides in a civil war. That seems bizarre to me.
Yeah, I'll answer your question directly, but we have to remember things have been complicated when it comes to America's relationship with the parties in the Middle East for a long time.
Yes.
We give money to Israel.
Yes.
But we also give money to the Palestinians in the West Bank.
True.
Who turn around and use U.S. taxpayers' money to award the families of terrorists who might be killed by Israel.
You're right.
So that's been going on. In Lebanon, we support the Lebanon government as it is.
Yeah.
But we help Israel attack Hezbollah, the terrorist group, which is also a political party in Lebanon.
Yes.
So let's go back to Syria. So the story out of the LA Times, in some ways, ought not to surprise us because, how does that saying go? The enemy of my friend or the friend of my enemy?
The enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of like that. In that if there are factions against the Assad regime, then they may be terrorists, but let's help them because we don't like Assad.
Yeah.
It's never nice, clean-cut lines.
It wasn't like World War II.
No.
That's why I say stay out of it unless it directly affects us at home.
Yeah.
But. Well, and Alex does...
I can see,
you know, Wesley was making the point earlier, and I can see where U.S. policy, and I certainly don't agree with Biden administration, but U.S. policy might be to try to push Russia and Iran out of Syria. So it might be to our advantage in defending Israel. But what do you take? What's your perspective on what Fred just said? Which is it was an excellent point that he's making. It's never clear cut in the Middle East, except perhaps in helping to protect Israel. Oh, and let me just ask you too, before I forget, Alex, there are Christians in Syria.
Yes,
that
there
if,
are.
If Al-Qaeda and ISIS, you know, I don't know what kind of government's coming, but if someone of that kind of depravity takes over, what's going to happen to the Christians in Syria who Assad left alone? He was gassing his own citizens with chemical weapons. But as far as I know, he left the Christians alone because, you know what, the Christians weren't trying to overthrow his regime. So what does this say for Christians as well? Go ahead.
You know, Ed, I'm so glad you bring that up, that yes, there are Christians in Syria, always have been. You know what's interesting? Church history tells us that probably within 200 years after the resurrection of Christ, the first thoroughly Christianized nation or the most intensely Christian, highest proportion of born-again Christians within 200 years after the life of Christ would have been Syria. So there, for, you know, 1,900-plus years, there have always been Christians in Syria. By the way, this is what's so interesting, I think, about today's issues, because we, you know, it's kind of organic where the conversation goes. Let me just say this. The question might be asked, why has Russia been so interested in helping Arab groups and terrorists? And I think, at least at the basis, Russia, even though it's been 30 years since the fall of communism, Russia has been intensely anti-Western. And the fundamentalist Muslims are intensely anti-Western. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be very simplistic, and Fred, Ed, Wesley, you guys can agree or disagree. What would fix everything over there is if Israel were allowed to win wars and defend itself. I mean, Israel's like the only nation in the world that is not, they can fight, they can engage in certain levels of self-defense. Israel is not allowed to win wars. And if they were allowed to exist, engage in, you know, their self-determination like any other sovereign nation. The complexities and danger of the Middle East would be fixed, I believe, in a very short order if Israel were really allowed to defend itself.
Now, what do you, let me ask you this, or ask the panel, is that not, do you not feel like they are being able to this go around? Or I'm sorry, not whether they are allowed to or not, are they not already, I feel like they're doing that this go around.
No, I think Alex is saying that the world opinion was telling them to cease fire in Gaza.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And is that what you're talking about, Alex?
Yeah, exactly. And now, and certainly with Trump, coming to be president, regardless of what you think of Trump, I mean, it's like regarding foreign policy, there's an adult in the room now.
Yeah. And I find it fascinating. In fact, Fred and I were talking about this just before the program started. Donald Trump is just going to wind up being a generational political figure.
Yeah.
And cultural figure.
Absolutely.
And it's you just wouldn't have predicted this. I never would have before 2016. But what he did in winning the election, two assassination attempts, all that, clearly seems to be the hand of God, and he's uniquely gifted for this moment. I don't think he certainly can't turn our country around by himself.
Sure.
I don't mean that kind of transformational figure, but the fact that the world is already starting to come to grips with that, you see him meeting with political leaders. Everybody understands what this election means, and things are already changing.
Yeah.
What was it? Somebody said that someone's commented that.
I forgot who said it, but we talked about it this morning in the show prep meeting that someone mentioned that Trump has done more for making peace around the world as a president-elect than Harris and Biden or Biden and Harris did in their 4 years.
4 years.
4 years.
Yeah. It's really extraordinary.
And there's one simple reason for that. Trump means business.
Yeah.
Trump was
president. 35 days ago, he won the election, and already, I mean, you know, I don't take a lot of joy in this, but I mean, it's like Biden doesn't exist.
No.
I mean, Trump is being met by world leaders and is like the de facto acting president.
To your point, Trudeau from Canada came down after one of his tweets.
Yes.
I'd say his tweet or his post.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, the entire Mexican government is scrambling to figure out what they're going to do in the face of threats of 25% tariffs. And I think the Mexican president fired back, well, we'll do tariffs too, and then immediately had to backtrack.
Yeah, that's right.
Because our economy dwarfs those. And like we're all saying, listen, we don't need to just simply throw our weight around just to be a bully. But good grief, America has basically been a pipeline of cash around the world, and it's time to keep some of that cash at home.
Yeah.
And I think that was part of the sentiment that was expressed in the election victory and not just the Electoral College victory, but the popular vote victory of Trump.
Well, I think Trump, in his first 4 years in office, brought clarity to the idea of what is right and wrong.
Right? Yeah, that's right.
He is not an appeaser.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why when he went to Paris this past weekend, all these world leaders that were there for the reopening of the Notre Dame Cathedral, all these leaders wanted to meet with him because they see the uncertainty in the world, and they do believe that Trump will do something with Iran, that the Biden administration would not.
Yep.
And everybody knows Iran is the catalyst for everything wrong that's in the Middle East right now.
Yep.
So they know that.
Yep.
And they're looking at what's going on in Ukraine. Trump on the weekend says, ceasefire. That's what has to happen.
Yeah.
And I do believe you will see that within a few months.
Yeah, I think sooner than that.
Yeah.
Listen, I think he's going to say to Syria, and you know, whoever's in charge, listen, we don't want Iranian influence here. We don't want Russian influence here. We're going to help you build back your country.
Uh-huh.
Okay, however you feel about that, folks, I think that's part of what Trump's going to say. And then he's going to say, and if we don't get it with you, we'll make sure we get it with somebody, whoever's next man up.
Yes.
All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with more of today's issues. Hope you stick around.
Did you know that every day, Preborn's network of clinics experiences 200 miracles? How? Preborn gives women with unplanned pregnancies a window into their womb through free ultrasounds, introducing them to the beautiful life growing inside. Once she meets her child inside her womb and hears their heartbeat, the chance of her baby's life doubles. Because of the generosity of you and me, who donate just $28 to sponsor an ultrasound, Preborn can do this. The cost of a dinner to save a life, the most worthwhile investment you can make. All gifts are tax deductible and go entirely to saving babies. Someday you may meet a baby that you rescued and you can give them a hug. Or maybe they'll give you a hug. Maybe they'll even save your life as they grow and pursue meaningful careers. One thing is for sure, you will never regret saving a child's life because life is a miracle. Please donate your best gift today. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. Ed Vitagliano, Fred Jackson, Alex McFarland, and Wesley Wildman, who is my right-hand man
yes,
today.
Yes, sir.
Sitting in Tim Wildman's seat. It is Monday, December 9th. You're running out of time, folks, if you haven't started your Christmas shopping. But enough inducement to anxiety. Anyway, it's a great time of the year. Hope you're having a blast and enjoying Jesus in a special way this time of year. Lots of stuff going on. And, Fred, we have some breaking news.
Wow. Breaking news out of New York. And I think a lot of people will celebrate this.
Yeah, in my opinion, great news.
Yes. Yeah. This is the story of Daniel Penny, the Marine who took down this guy on a New York subway who was acting violently. He was threatening violence against people on the subway. Daniel Penny, a young man who was on the subway, he sees the danger of this. He puts this guy in a chokehold, and the passenger that Daniel Penny brought down died eventually. And Daniel Penny was charged by Alvin Bragg's very corrupt Justice Department, Alvin Bragg being the district attorney there, charged with manslaughter, which could have sent Daniel Penny to jail for 15 years. The jury on Friday kept coming back three or four times saying, you know, we're having questions about the instructions from the judge. On Friday afternoon, with the instruction coming or the suggestion coming from Alvin Bragg's prosecution, oh, we're just going to drop the manslaughter charge, but we now want the jury to look at the negligence charge, which could still send Penny to prison for 4 years.
Yeah.
The breaking news is this, folks. The jury came back this morning and within moments came back with a not guilty verdict on negligence. So Daniel Penny gets to go home and gets to put this behind him. Now, there is going to be a civil case. The dad of the gentleman who died.
Jordan Neely.
Yes. The dad has said he's going to bring a civil case. We'll see how that goes. But as far as the criminal case goes, it's done. The jury says we're finished. We don't think Daniel Penny did anything wrong.
Yep. Wesley, why don't you go ahead? Because you seem to have strong feelings about this. And then Alex, jump in.
I'm just thankful that we've seen cases like this when you got really deep blue roots. You got a deep blue judge in a deep blue city, and someone does something right, and somehow or another they get accused of some form of racism or some form of, in this case, just what they was accused of legally, the accusation of manslaughter.
The prosecutor kept calling Daniel Penny the
white guy.
The white guy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That type of stuff. And you see, in years past, we've seen over and over again where we go, we know how this is going to play out.
Right.
They're not going to get a fair trial. So I'm thankful to see that he's been given a fair trial when all the evidence was presented, that the jurors came back and said, look, he's innocent. Just to remind y'all, this is a former Marine who stood up for multiple people and put
of different races.
Yeah, multiple different races, different ethnicities, different genders. There's only two genders,
right?
Male and female. But he stood up and did something courageous, and we need more of this. Over the last 20 or 30 years, we've seen a society both in entertainment and education and politics that has pretty much laid the path to nobody get involved because there's a chance. I mean, think about defunding the police, right? This idea of just staying out of it at the expense of not ruining your life, mm-hmm. even doing what's right, because and I'm going off on a little bit of a tangent.
Sure,
here,
it's all right.
But a little bit of a tangent for me would be this goes back to just kids in school, the no tolerance policy. No matter what, they don't consider the fact that if somebody punches you and you defend yourself, all of a sudden they're both equal and they both get kicked out of school. That type, I'm bringing this all the way back to home now, but that kind of teaching, it devolves into, well, the good guys don't want to take a chance of ruining their career,
right,
or their life, but then the bad guys, they don't care. They've been in and out of prison anyways.
Because
they're bad guys. Yeah. And so you've built a society over the last 20, 30 years of good guys essentially not wanting to get involved. Well, in this case, he did, and he took a risk, and he potentially saved many people because Jordan Neely was a gentleman who was threatening the lives of other people. In fact, if he had a weapon of any kind, he probably would have killed someone. One other thing, Alex, and I want you to hop in here. Yeah. Also, this happened during the time, if you remember, of people in New York City being pushed into trains.
Yes.
You remember this?
Yeah.
So that was also during that same timeline. Now, I don't know, remember the window of that, but they've had some instances in New York City of people being pushed by evil people into trains.
Yeah.
This is at a train station.
Yeah.
And this guy's threatening to kill people.
Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, well, and the people that were on the train or the subway, whatever it was, said they felt like they were going to get killed.
Yes.
When Jordan Neely began to, he threw down his jacket, he began to threaten and yell, and before Daniel Penny intervened, the people said they felt like they were going to die. Now, I'm not a legal scholar, I'm not an attorney, but all my life I've heard about Good Samaritan laws,
yeah,
and a subset of Good Samaritan laws is a legal term called duty to rescue. And so, you know, like you said, Wesley, this is deep blue territory. And I think it's very telling that over and over, Daniel Penny was referred to his race,
mm-hmm,
a white guy. So, Ed, let me ask you guys this. Don't you think, and of course this is purely speculative, but had he not been Caucasian, I don't think there would have been a conviction or the desire to go after him for a homicide. I think he was trying to protect people. I think he should have been protected under the broad umbrella of Good Samaritan laws. I think he was made an example of because he was white.
Well, and I think that's exactly right. And that goes to the heart of the matter, because the assistant district attorney who is prosecuting Daniel Penny was a white woman.
Yeah.
Okay, this wasn't a black prosecutor, because the key is not necessarily the race of the prosecutor. It's the ideology driving what's happening in New York City.
Right.
This is a Soros-infested district attorney's office that is only looking to score points on the DEI scale or the woke scale. This is why they were going to prosecute the bodega owner a couple of years ago. Remember, who defended himself with a knife and the assailant died. They were going to prosecute the bodega owner until it went national, the news, and the embarrassment level went off the charts. So the tossing aside, we saw this against Donald Trump, the tossing aside of legal precedent and laws in favor of, in this case with Daniel Penny, ideological prosecutions was made no clearer than with the district attorney withdrawing count one which was the
manslaughter
charge, in favor of the negligence charge, because they figured that was the way to get Daniel Penny some prison time, because they didn't care about what's right here. They cared about getting their, I'm sorry to use this language, their scalp, their woke scalp. And what I've been reading is that is considered the risk of a coercive verdict or compromised verdict, because the judge is weighing and putting his thumb on the scale, telling the jury to go back and consider the negligence charge, because we got to get something on this guy. And I'm glad the whole lot of them failed. Go ahead, Wesley.
Do y'all think, Fred, do you think, is it a bit of a stretch to feel like this is one more win in the direction of doing away with this constant seeing things through the lens of skin color? You know what I mean? Because they emphasize that a lot, and anybody in their own mind can look at this and go, this, regardless of whether he was found guilty or not of manslaughter, it had absolutely nothing to do with either one of their skin colors.
No. And I understand, I believe the jury was a mixed race jury. But you know what? Stuff has happened over the last couple of years New York.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
New Yorkers are upset whether they have black skin or white skin or brown skin.
That's right.
They're upset with the violence. They're scared to walk down a street at certain times of the day.
Yeah,
isn't that all times now.
Yeah, and so these people are sitting there.
Not a help.
They've seen the story. Yeah. Daniel Penny, after this occurred, was questioned by police. He went to the police headquarters, was questioned because he didn't think he did anything wrong.
Yep. Right.
He was just helping these people who were being threatened by Mr. Neely.
Yeah. And who was still alive when the cops got there.
He was still alive.
He was still alive. And you know they didn't perform CPR on him?
No, because they were afraid to get whatever he had.
Yeah, so this whole, if we're going to discuss anything, which I can kind of understand their position during the COVID and all that kind of stuff, and they're trying to look after themselves. But on the other hand, if we're going to have a discussion about anything, what about the paramedics that showed up and didn't perform CPR?
Right.
So,
I would say, Alex, that if this had been a subway car full of white people, and Daniel Penny had choked out a single young black man, I would say, okay, maybe there's something racial here. Okay, but it was a subway car full of all kinds of people.
He had no history of this either.
And he had no history of this. Jordan Neely had a history. He had a long rap sheet.
That's a good point.
All of the mixed race witnesses, the people on the subway car, they said, we were scared to death. This young man saved us.
Yeah.
So I think to Fred's point, in answering the question Wesley raised, I think New Yorkers are waking up to what woke district attorneys are going to get you, which is chaos, and they're all in this together.
Yeah.
That's what New York City's learning.
Yes.
Well, you know, I know this is part of the big backdrop, but the way that Marxism is imposed on a culture, and this goes back to Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals and Karl Marx's playbook as well, create disorder, destabilize a country, and in the disorder, they can introduce new order, which is a woke, progressive, Marxist order. And I think they wanted to make Jordan Neely a martyr, much like George Floyd was depicted as. But, you know, this is a win for the rule of law. And, you know, other than maybe California cities, I think not only New York fellows, but all across America, the big urban areas that have just become dangerous, nearly unlivable, I think people are tired of it. They want the rule of law upheld. They want some semblance of order restored. Now, I'm not saying California is there yet. Maybe they will get there. But, you know, Minneapolis, Atlanta, other cities, they want the lawlessness to stop.
Well, and let me tell you why the Democratic Party, let's set aside the results of this past November election. Mm. The Democratic Party is facing some serious issues because of this issue. So let's take a trip down memory lane to the 1960s, and the Democratic Party, like this Democratic Party, this is history repeating itself, became known for being soft on crime. Mm-hmm. This is what catapulted Richard Nixon into the White House over a Democrat who, although it wasn't the incumbent, Lyndon Baines Johnson, it was a very popular Hubert Humphrey. Hubert Humphrey, because the Democratic Party in both 68 and 72 became known as being soft on communists and soft on crime.
Yeah.
And in 1968, American cities were burning. A lot of people don't remember this or don't know this, but in an 18-month period in the early 70s, because of what started in the 1968, there were 2,500 bombings in this country over an 18-month period between 1972 and 1973. Americans were afraid. And when you're afraid, you drop all the polite disagreements about guns or butter, and you say, we want somebody to protect us.
Yeah.
And the Democratic Party of 2024 is staring down the abyss, into the abyss, at the same kind of reputation with American voters. And if they're not careful, if they continue to embrace this woke garbage in the inner cities, they're going to be in for another 4-8 year losing streak. And I say, good riddance.
Yeah. Ed, did you see over the weekend, and I'm not going to use the language he used, but Steve Shale, the Democrat strategist who made some rather scathing assessments, and again, I'm not going to use the language, but he basically said that, look, the brand, the Democrat Party brand is down the drain in the mind, in the opinions of American people.
I don't disagree with that. Hey, let's hang on. Fred, go ahead. You said you get some breaking news.
Fox is reporting at this hour the man matching the description of the gunman who shot the United Health CEO last week has been taken into custody in Pennsylvania. It's been an extensive manhunt since that shooting outside that hotel in Manhattan last week of Mr. Thompson, the CEO of United Health. They've been looking for this guy. They knew he had left New York. But right now, Fox News is reporting that a man matching the description of that shooter has been taken into custody in Pennsylvania. More breaking news.
Yeah, so...
So it's good news good news Monday.
It's good news Monday. If this is the guy...
Okay.
And now I'm just checking quickly here on CNN. I don't see it, but this is what Fox is saying. And it's a man matching the description. But over the weekend, there were a lot of...
Well, we have a lead.
What's that?
We have a lead at minimum.
Yes. Yeah. There was a lot of talk on X and other social media platforms that this guy had gotten away.
Yes.
Because he had slipped into Central Park where there are no cameras.
Uh-huh.
And you can change your outfit. You can exit anywhere you want, even where there's no cameras. And there were people saying he's left the state. Well, Pennsylvania is out of the state. But I'll tell you, it's increasingly difficult. Listen, if you're trying to plan the perfect crime, okay, I'm advising you don't do it because there are cameras everywhere. Go ahead, Fred.
I tell you, it was really interesting you mentioned that because last week in the midst of this story, an investigator was interviewed by Fox and he said the fatal error that this suspect made, he was staying at a hostel. And he was flirting with the desk clerk, and he took his mask down.
Oh, I thought that was at the Starbucks.
Well, maybe both.
Okay.
Maybe both. But they said the facial recognition software that authorities have now, he said that was the fatal error.
Because that was enough?
That was enough. The facial recognition was enough. Plus,
they got us all mapped out.
He left a coffee cup or something behind at the Starbucks.
Yeah.
They took his DNA from there. So there are tools today, plus the myriad of cameras all over New York City.
Yeah.
They said it was just a matter of time. In fact, when I came into work around 6 this morning, there was word that the arrest was within hours.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right. Well, listen, I think we're all squeamish at the amount of surveillance that goes on in modern societies because of the possibility. Wesley, I'll toss to you, and then Alex, the possibility of the abuse of it.
Sure.
It has been abused by strong, powerful, centralized governments. But the flip side, like any technology, the flip side is it comes in handy when you need it.
Well, I'll add to that. I have a lot of things that bother me about the government having all the cameras and all that kind of stuff. However, the counter to that, in my opinion, with something that everyday citizens can control, is have their own. So that's why you have a lot of people that have their own. So you have private companies that have their own security system.
Yeah.
So you can say, well, yours show this, well, mine shows that, and we can kind of lay it out. A lot more people nowadays have the Ring cameras or cameras at their house, and so citizens themselves are just as concerned about the government having all the cameras from their angles, their positions. So we have our own now as well. And you get a lot of people videoing nowadays. Yeah. As much as I would like to talk about that and share my opinion, I don't, there's nothing we can do about that. As far as at this point about what the government does, but to your point, there are situations like this that it can help you.
Alex, I want you to address the surveillance issue, but I also want to toss in here. Over the weekend, I noticed on social media, and folks, I'm not addicted to it. I keep up with it because of my job.
Sure.
So it's actually kind of depressing.
And
to
hockey.
See, that's for me.
Oh, okay. Okay,
that's
okay,
not for you. AFA. But I was kind of surprised. I'm not naive. I was kind of surprised at the number of leftists who were supportive of the killing of this CEO. I don't know if any of you have been seeing any of this. They were basically applauding this killer because they had bad experiences with their health insurance. I was pretty shocked to see people being supportive of that kind of murder.
Yeah. Well, I used the word a few moments ago, lawlessness. I don't know. Wesley, you might can help me out. I've got your dad's latest newsletter, and it was talking about the number of college students that believed it was okay to cheat in an election if it was to support, quote, the right candidate by ideology.
Yeah.
And so, I had read even medical doctors that had posted things on social media that, they were glad that this United Healthcare CEO had been shot. Let me say this. Even if I disagree with insurance claim denials and things like that, we would never condone moral wrong, violence, murder to correct some other societal wrong. So if this person is the killer and if he has been apprehended, that's a good thing. It's always good for the law to be upheld. But let me talk about surveillance for just a minute. I was on the Hamilton Corner about a month ago. I can't remember the guy's name, but I had a guest on about the global surveillance state that we have become. And frankly, guys, I think that the rise of technology, even though it can be good, I really do think the wiring of the planet, shall we say, has become part of the setting of the stage for the end times. Someday, we don't know when, but the Antichrist and his regime will control the world as a global police state. Now, listen to this. The guest I had on the Hamilton Corner was talking about in China, because there's facial recognition software like was used in the apprehension of this suspect. But not only does it look at your face and the structure of your, facial characteristics, software even looks at your walk, your gait.
Yeah.
And they said in China now, think about this, 1.4 billion people in China, they say in China, any one of those people could be looked at on camera and identified and their entire history in 22 seconds or less.
Wow. This is AI driven.
Yeah. Yes. So to add to what you said a moment ago, not that anybody listening would do this, but if you're planning the perfect crime, In the 21st century, you won't get away.
Uh-uh.
Don't do it. And of course, we know the Lord is watching. We should live right, do right,
because you certainly won't get away with what you're doing.
The eyes of the Lord are watching. So it's time to have our house in order and live right, isn't it?
Amen. Amen. Well, I just think it's and Fred, we'll come right back to you here. The irony of this young man, because for all intents and purposes, it seems like a younger guy who shot this CEO. He's opposed to big corporations, United Healthcare, and what's one of the first things he does? He goes to Starbucks, another big corporation. Okay, I know it's no comparison to what he did. Whoever this guy is, I just think it's bizarre. These people seem to be off their rocker.
Yeah.
You hate big corporations or you don't?
Uh-huh.
Anyway, go ahead, Fred.
No, I'm just go back to the Daniel Penny story for a second. Out front, there are protesters. And I'm not sure if there's going to be violence over the acquittal of Daniel Penny, but the uprising has already started there in New York City. There's a news conference going on with a community group there. So be praying for Daniel Penny. His difficulties are not over yet.
Nope.
Be praying for him.
And be praying for New York City.
Yes.
Because if there are riots planned and there are people who make a living
be
off
encouraged
that kind of
too,
thing.
That Daniel Penny was acquitted. And if you're we need more Daniel Pennies out there that are willing to stand up.
All right, folks, we are going to take a five-minute break for news. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. When we come back, this is Ed, Wesley, Alex, Dr. Alex McFarland, Steve Jordahl will be in the house, and we'll be talking some more about what's going on both here and abroad in a Christian perspective. Hope you'll join us.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.